I would like to take it before our confirmation tonight. Apologize for keeping you gentlemen waiting. Committee was delayed for half an hour. We're receiving our budget projections, which are extremely important to us in particular, but of importance to you gentlemen also, and I do apologize for keeping you waiting. I'd like to take up Senate Bill 146, bill we had before us by Senator Menard. There is a committee substitute that each member has in his folder. Mr. Gifford, is there anyone here from the department?
Yes.
And the change in the committee substitute allows the granting of licenses for medical reasons, but deletes the words family hardship. And my understanding is that it is agreeable with Senator Menard and that the department also finds it agreeable. This time I'd like to call Anita Hensley.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Juanita Hensley. I'm the Chief of Driver Services for the Division of Motor Vehicles. Good afternoon, gentlemen. The committee substitute, deleting for family hardship, it was a request of the department that that be deleted because of the definition is how do you define a family hardship. What someone may deem as a family, as an inconvenience, or a family hardship may be an inconvenience to them. The medical reasons, we have no objections to medical reasons because we could very, very well identify the need to take a child to and from their chemotherapy, basically, or to and from dialysis, or something of that nature. And we would have no objections of issuing a license for those reasons. We have no problem with this committee substitute draft at all. We would support it at no problem at all.
Thank you, Anita. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Porchot.
We heard on testimony before that under number one on line 7, page 1, person has filed proof of financial responsibility, that is only allowed in the case where someone is not guilty of the traffic infraction, that they were where they found out that they didn't have proof of insurance. Is that right?
Anytime an individual requests a limited license from the Division of Motor Vehicles where their license is suspended for not having liability insurance to begin with, prior to the issuance of that limited license, they must submit proof that they are insured with SR-22, which is a liability insurance policy. That must, before we can issue.
Were they guilty or not guilty of an infraction?
No, that doesn't have anything to do with a violation of a motor vehicle law, other than the fact that they were in an accident. The damages were in excess of $500, regardless of fault in the accident, and the individual did not have insurance.
I'd suggest, Mr. Chairman, I don't know who gave us that testimony. That didn't sound right to me at the time, and I don't think it has bearing with the new CS. If we were still looking at the other bill, I would be quite concerned. Actually, I'm a little concerned that we heard testimony that was different than the testimony we just heard.
My recollection was that was Senator Menard or someone from his office. I'm not sure which.
Okay, well, can I clarify that, sir?
No, I understand what you're saying. I think that sounds reasonable. Thank you.
Any further questions for Ms. Helmsley? Thank you, Wendy. Is there anyone else here to testify on this bill? What is the pleasure of the committee with regard to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move an unanimous consent that we adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 146, State Affairs, with individual recommendations.
You heard the motion that we adopt the committee substitute. Is there any objections? Hearing none, what is the pleasure of the committee with regard to the
bill? Move it out with the individual recommendations.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill is passed. The committee made the recommendations.
I'm not sure. hear you.
I never said, I always like, I usually get along.
There's a couple of mess when I touch you.
I did want to move it along. I got another chance in judiciary to look at it in addition.
Probably sit for a couple of weeks.
Also, we've been, or at least the chairman has been very difficult on Senator Menard's marmot bill, which.
Oh, so this is a.
I'd like to at least make sure his other legislation moves along if I'm holding up something with that.
Are you telling me something about the marmot bill?
Nothing you don't know, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly sympathize with that.
There. I think.
Well, you've had your conversation.
Quite frankly.
On this whole matter.
It's my personal opinion that to call Major General Hugh Cox, who is here for his confirmation. Major General Cox, would you please join us, sir?
Thank you.
Does each member have a copy of?
Yeah, they each have a file with
General Cox's resume?
Yes, sir.
General Cox, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to make a very short introductory series of remarks. First of all, you do have my biography, which lays out my professional qualifications for the post in question. I'd be happy to respond to any questions on that, but I do have 33 years of military service, of which over 4 years has been in the state of Alaska. As you know, when you look at the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the predominant numbers of people are military, and I'm in the command of the Alaska Army and Air Guard, and a great deal of the effort of the whole department is toward that end, which follows federal military regulations and rules, of which I have some familiarity and experience. My other two responsibilities outside of being the Adjutant General and Commander of the Guard fall in the area of the Alaska Division of Emergency Services and Division of Veterans Affairs. There are others, but those are the predominant responsibilities within my department. Being a veteran myself, I think I have certainly empathy for veterans' issues. And having participated in various emergencies over the last few years, not the least of which was the 64 Anchorage earthquake, I hope I'll have a good grasp of the things that are needed as far as the department's support for planning for natural and technological disasters, as well as helping manage the reconstitution efforts of the state and the local authorities with federal assistance should we have those kinds of disasters. I've been in the appointed position by Governor Hickel now for some 31 days. I've spent these initial weeks both here in Juneau as well as in my office and traveling to a few of our locations in Alaska to try to assess the status of the department and where I think we may be going in the future. I would report to you now, I'm not really clear as yet where we're going in the future as far as any changes are concerned, but my initial assessment of the department overall is that the department has been well run in the past. There are certainly some issues that need to be worked harder. I think that I will bring a fresh look to the position to try to make some of the previously existing issues no longer issues, as well as the feeling that I would imagine most of us go into new positions thinking we can always do better than our predecessors, and I wouldn't have taken the position if I didn't think so. But I think the assessment that I've made so far indicates to me that the department is in good shape, especially on the military side, and relatively so in the area of disaster services. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be prepared to answer any questions that anyone had.
Thank you, General. I don't have a question, so let me make one statement. There have been, over the past several years, some problems with the allocation of budget monies to the state's veterans groups for the management of the Veterans Service Officer Program. And I hope you'll give that some personal attention. I have many veterans in my constituency, and they are concerned about it, very supportive of the program, and there has, again, has been some problems, and it's not an appropriate matter for confirmation here, but I just wanted to mention that to you. It's probably something that you are familiar with by this time, and I just hope you'll give that some personal attention.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Are there, Senator Porcello?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to echo those thoughts also, and General Cox and I have discussed this, and I'm sure that you know some of the history by now. And I guess, and I don't know what other people's intentions are, but my intentions on the program would be that there be an objective, fair, RFP-type-driven process, and recognizing there's several competing interests. It's always difficult to know how to split the baby, but there is the danger of splitting it too fine. But frankly, there's also the possibility of making significant awards to folks that aren't necessarily doing the most efficient job with the monies. I would like to see us get a little bit away from the designated line items in the budget, which were vetoed. And that doesn't seem to be the approach. I think the Department Administration has kind of directed a more RFP-type approach to it. I would hope that we'd be able to call a group, and I know, you're going to have to pick, or someone has to pick this group to review things, and clearly the composition of that group is very important to the selections. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I would, may, Mr. Chairman, can I make a
please
statement on that? After we talked, Senator, about the need to have good procedures, at that time, I did not know what the procedures were. Since that time, I've gone into a little bit of detail on finding out what they are. I must say they're very bureaucratic in nature, but I guess we tend to operate that way at all levels of the government. And certainly, we will do the best we can to get a broad representation on the group that consider those RFPs to make sure that those organizations that show the best support and the most efficient support to veterans get those funds. Having said that, the division of the funds in the past under that procedure resulted in a great deal of controversy, which you are aware of, and there was in fact a ruling by the court in Anchorage on the procedures themselves. In fact, there's still a protest, I guess that's not the correct terminology, but not a suit either, but a questioning of the decision based on the split the last time. I intend to follow the procedures that have already been established since they've been blessed by the court in Anchorage. But having said that, the best of procedures will only be as good as those that rule as a result of the procedures, and we'll have to have good representation on that committee to make sure that we get the best out of the money for the veterans.
Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up, just
please do, Senator.
I'm sure you're aware of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee that did an audit, and we just approved that here for release, and I think your agency's comments hopefully are in there, but for the benefit of the committee, it said a passable job was done, but clearly there was some room for improvement in the process that they had reviewed from last year.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are there further questions from the members of the committee? If not, General Cox, thank you very much for coming here today. I appreciate it. Your resume is very impressive, and the committee appears to have no further questions. And again, we thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next, I would like to call Colonel Danny Dennis. Colonel Dennis, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Senator. I'm before the committee to be confirmed as a Brigadier General in the Alaska Air National Guard. My assignment now is as Assistant Adjutant General. General Schaefer, General Cox's predecessor, selected me initially in November, and General Cox has ratified that choice. My job is basically to assist General Cox in Air Guard matters. There is Colonel Ken Taylor is the commander of the Air Guard and has the actual operational command. I've been a staff officer all my life, all my military life, as a military lawyer in both the U.S. Navy on active duty and the Army National Guard in Idaho and the Air National Guard in Alaska. So it's a new job for me. It's an exciting job, and I look forward to it. It's particularly nice, Senator Rohde, to be selected to a job as an attorney. As you know, attorneys sometimes are the butt of jokes, and even General Cox made me a butt of a joke this morning. But
as the only as the only attorney in the Senate, I understand completely.
The only one left.
Yes.
We're working on that. No, I'm just kidding.
Are there questions, Senator Ehrlich?
Mr. Chairman, and this is sort of a general question either for Colonel Dennis or for Major General Cox, and that is I just want to sort of get an idea of how many people we actually had in the Persian Gulf. Senator Halford's been working on a bill for a special amount of money for those people that served over there, and I thought maybe you, between the three of you, if we could get an idea of how many people were over there, not only just the Guard, but from our bases here. I don't know if we know that, but
Colonel Carroll's done some work on that. Tom?
Doesn't have to be right now. I just thought.
Okay. I
wanted to get some kind of information on it because we do have a couple bills to help people in the Persian Gulf. One on the permanent fund, right. You should be aware of if you're not already. And the second one is a $500 cash bonus for anyone who served in the Persian Gulf. So
we appreciate that.
Senator Porcheau.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Colonel Dennis, I just was reading through your resume and something caught my eye. One of your children is named Caleb.
Yes.
My son Caleb is the only
is
person
right?
that I know who's named Caleb.
Is yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody else's kid's name.
There are not many.
Let me ask another question. A number of my classmates from the university went on to school at the University of Idaho College of Law, and mm-hmm. I wonder if you perhaps knew Michael Verbilis.
Yes, I know Mike. Yeah.
And his father was, I believe, a colonel in the Air Force.
Yes. Yeah. I know Mike.
It is indeed a small world.
It is a small world.
Did you graduate the same year?
What?
Did you graduate the same?
No, I think that Colonel Dennis is younger than I am. You're younger than I am, so.
You couldn't tell us.
You should be in politics.
You'll run for office, along with Schwarzkopf.
Well, I think we've grilled him enough.
Yes. thank you very much for that. What can you say about somebody who's schooling your classmates?
What can you say with somebody with a son named Caleb?
Won the committee over. Next, I'd like to call Colonel Thomas C. Carroll. Colonel Kershaw, you have the floor, sir.
Very good. My name is Tom Carroll. I am here for confirmation as promotion of Brigadier General, state rank. I command the Army Guard for General Cox, who, of course, commands the National Guard. And in that regard, I manage and execute policy and programs on a daily basis for the Army Guard. Personal note, born and raised in Alaska. I told an earlier committee 12 years ago I became eligible for the Pioneers Home. I presently reside in Anchorage. I've lived in numerous communities throughout the state. And I'm very familiar with our programs and state programs and how they impact statewide on our people and your constituents. With that, sir, any questions? We'd be more than happy to answer.
Perhaps the chair could reiterate Senator Ewing's question. Do you have any idea of how many people we do have serving in the Persian Gulf?
I can give you in some areas. It's approximately 90 Marines. There's approximately 36 Army Guardsmen. There's 235 members of the 6th Infantry Division. On a statistical basis, based on the number of actual DOD members that were deployed to the Persian Gulf, this is where math really gets interesting, based on the population of the state of Alaska, statistically, Alaska residents in service should represent about 1,200 total, if that statistic carried over throughout the nation. They listed about 60 personnel that were residents of Juneau, and based on the population of Juneau, the percentage carries through. So it could be as high as 1,200 and as low as 400. We're trying to get those, but it's difficult in some cases to put together figures that based on an individual's HOMA record, which is what some of the figures we've been trying to get from the Pentagon. And we're able to confirm those people that have actually been deployed from Alaska itself. And now that doesn't take into account now a large number of Air Guard personnel who have been on a continuous deployment since August in support of Desert Shield to begin with and Desert Storm, and up to two KC-135s with as many as 3 to 4 crews, both in England and forward deployed into Saudi Arabia, the Middle East. I don't know if that answers enough.
No, that was very good, and I want to sort of get that feeling of the involvement in the Persian Gulf, because I could never put my finger on exactly, you know, what we were talking about, but I think pretty much what we saw from some of the other bills, that the 1,400 was a pretty accurate figure, I think, that was on the fiscal that I saw in the finance committee.
I think the good planning ballpark is probably 1,200 plus.
And I assume that if they're on maneuvers, like in the Air National Guard, Mr. Chairman, like between England and Saudi Arabia, that those are Alaskan Air Guardsmen, is that what?
Absolutely.
You're
in many cases, our people have served as volunteers, as opposed to being actually federalized under Title 10, U.S. Code.
Are there any further questions?
And just one other question. We had just one casualty then from Alaska that you're aware of then?
Yes, sir, just one casualty from Alaska. Statistically, I don't know how that carries out, and that's sort of a bleak statistic to even begin to consider, but almost maybe it does indicate the degree of involvement.
Are there any further questions for Colonel Carroll? If not, thank you very much for coming here, sir. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
With the approval of the members of the committee chairman will notify the President of the Senate that we have interviewed the members today, and that no member has found has raised any objection. However, each member reserves the right to cast their vote based on their personal feelings. The usual letter, if you'll.
I was just going to say there is a usual letter. Are we signing something today?
No, sir, because I don't have the letter ready. But I will, in fact, I'm not sure whether all members sign it or whether just the committee chairman signs. And I will. My recollection was the committee chairman.
Just the committee chair.
That's what I recall.
I think every member signed it.
I think every member.
That's the way it was done in the House.
In any event, we will be forwarding a letter stating that there has been no objection to your approval. And wish you well.
Thank you.
Committee is adjourned.